Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi. Your parents' well-appointed rec room with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the best in late night talk radio. I'm Richard Serrett, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast Toronto affiliate News Talk 1010. 39 years ago, this very night, I can tell you exactly what I was doing, where I was, who I was with, moment by moment. I was at 29 Proctor Ave in Brantford, Ontario, at the home of my old friend Tom Balin. We were barely 16 years old, drinking Werner's ginger ale and eating his mother's Christmas baking, coconut chocolate cookies. We were watching Monday Night Football, the Miami Dolphins versus the New England Patriots, but we had the sound turned down because we were listening to an album I had just purchased during a high school field trip to Toronto at Sam the Record Man. Capitol Records had just released the Beatles' 1967 to 1970 greatest hits. We had only just discovered the Beatles. We had that record playing on the record player full blast. Meanwhile, with the sound turned down on the TV, we missed ABC's Howard Cosell report to the world this message.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
I walked home that night in the snow, dreaming of a possible Beatles reunion. When I got in the door, my sister told me John Lennon had just been murdered. It was like getting a punch to my stomach. I still feel it almost every day, 39 years later. Now, before we were so rudely interrupted a week ago last Friday, I was in the midst of a very poignant conversation with filmmaker Christopher Garitano about some deeply disturbing allegations about what may have taken place beneath the radar tower at Camp Hero on the eastern shore of Long Island in Montauk, New York. I'm not sure why we were knocked off the air exactly, but we're going to try again. What lies beneath the radar tower in Camp Hero? Were missing children taken there and subjected to unimaginable torture and abuse in order to create super soldiers? Was the town of Montauk subjected to a large-scale psychological warfare experiment? Thousands, perhaps up to 1 million children were supposedly taken there. They were known as the Montauk Boys, subjected to MK-Ultra torture at the hands of, perhaps, former Nazis, exfiltrated into the United States under Project Paperclip. Coming up in the second half of this transmission, last month we commemorated the 56th anniversary of the murder of President John F. Kennedy. My guest in hours 3 and 4 has pieced together a theory that few have dared to even contemplate. Lee Harvey Oswald was not only a patsy, he had a doppelganger, a look-alike that was set up to take the fall. George Schwimmer joins me to lay out a very compelling case. Are you ready to have your reality redefined? Coming up next, what really happened on the eastern shore of Long Island, New York, beneath the infamous radar tower in Camp Hero? Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler. Hang your cloak on a peg. Grab a stool and come gather round the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Christopher Garitano produced and directed several award-winning films, including the 2005 film Horror Business and the 2015 docudrama Montauk Chronicles, which received awards for Best Documentary at the 2015 Philip K. Dick Film Festival and Best Picture at the Celluloid Film Festival. Chris is the creator of the comic strip and anticipated graphic novel South Texas Blues, originally published in Fangoria magazine in 2012. In 2016, Chris collaborated with Texas Crew Productions and History Channel as an executive producer, host, and director of recreations on the television movie The Dark Files. He's also currently developing a new scripted series with Digi Studios, a boots-on-the-ground travel channel series, Strange World, that investigates the legends, mysteries, and first-person accounts that fuel this country's creepiest conspiracy theories and unexplained. Christopher Garitano, welcome back to Coast AM. How are you?
I'm good. Stable at the moment. Let's see what happens.
Exactly. Take two, before we were so rudely interrupted. Let me ask you, I don't know exactly what happened. Has anything like that happened to you before? While we were in the midst of discussing Montauk, we got knocked off the air.
Again, every time it happens, I just try to attest it to technical difficulties. But after knowing about the current climate, social political climate, the wars going on in political parties, and all of the interference on multiple social networks of people getting removed or demonetized, I'm not completely dismissing the idea that maybe there was some interference. I mean, think about it, and I know you have. We're talking about murder, mass murder. Another thing that we might discover as true on the part of past versions of the U.S. government and other governments around the world. And as you also know, the further you go into research, the scarier this gets. I mean, true research, hard fact. Let's put all the other stuff aside in the Montauk Project, like the time travel stuff and the alien stuff and all of that. What it boils down to is this is most likely was a location for human experimentation, and there were many others that we could prove.
Well, certainly, yeah. The record shows there have been many examples of the government experimenting on its own people, and we can talk about a number of cases, which I'm sure we will during the next 2 hours. But let's start from the beginning. Because we got cut off about a half an hour into our conversation a couple of weeks ago. I want to start from the beginning, and let's try again.
Sure.
Let's see where we go. For those not familiar with Montauk, New York, on the eastern coast, the very eastern tip of Long Island, and Camp Hero. What is Camp Hero? When was it opened, and when was it decommissioned?
Okay, well, Camp Hero, the area where Camp Hero is a military base, always was, one way or another, even way back before the Spanish-American War, before just around the time of the Revolutionary War even. It was always a location of interest. But primarily, if we're talking about Camp Hero or Fort Hero, that came to fruition around World War II. And that's where the semi-automatic ground environment radar, which is the iconic radar tower that really is the landmark of that location. Oddly enough, it's adjacent, only 5 miles away from a resort town, as everyone knows it. It was a quiet fishing village. Many times throughout history, there were people that attempted to make it a vacation spot, which it really is. I mean, there are hotels, restaurants, resorts, nightclubs. I mean, that's really what everybody knows it for. But 5 miles from town, if you look above the foliage, you can see this sage, this World War II relic, the Sage radar tower peeking above the tree canopy. And that is deep in the woods. And that is where Camp Hero is to this day. Now defunct, it has historical markers at it telling you everything about the 16-inch guns, the casements, the bunkers that were there, the locations where people slept and resided, and how this evolved through time. And it currently is not a military installation, but somewhere around, you know, the early 80s, there were several men who claim that they were part of secret experiments that occurred beneath the ground. And several that happened topside in certain structures, but mostly beneath the ground. And what these gentlemen said, and these gentlemen were known as Alfred Bielek, Preston Nichols, and Duncan Cameron, who are all now passed on. They're gone. They're not here to tell their story anymore. But they claim that they entered this base through an underground railroad that was transported from a place called Brookhaven National Labs that still exists and is still in operation, that is a little further west of where Camp Hero is. And these guys claim that they were recruited by Brookhaven and that they went underneath the ground and took a railway to work in a secret facility underneath the ground at Camp Hero. So while there were light operations happening post-World War II, underneath the ground, these guys claim that there were the most horrific things happening. There were human experiments that required subjects and mainly kids being kidnapped off the streets and surrounding suburban New York and New York City. And covered around that story, because at its center, it's a story of human experimentation, but around that story, I believe, is the distraction, which is this elaborate science fiction tale that could be, if interpreted as it is, a Z-grade science fiction movie where there's a hero and there's a monster from the id. It was like cherry-picked from a million different things, including The Twilight Zone and Forbidden Planet and a whole bunch of other things that I saw. So every time I heard that portion from these guys, I was like, wait a second, that's from a movie. That's from Star Trek. But this is the weirdest thing. So why would you tell this story, this weird sci-fi story, claim it's true, time travel, alien contact, reverse engineering, all this stuff, but at its center have a story of kidnapping and murder and even worse, you know, the most perverse things happen to these kids and mind control mainly, because that's what the project was supposed to be. And it seems to me that the science fiction story was a distraction and that the true story. I'm not saying those things didn't happen. I'm just saying if we focus on something that we know happened in this country, and it's even more sinister than anything you could imagine, these things did happen. They happened at Holmesburg Prison, and they happened in the Tuskegee Medical Experiment and during MKUltra experiments. So why not at this place? And why was this? These two very different stories melded together? And that is what I've been trying to discover for over a decade now. I made a movie. I made two television programs on it. One was the first episode of my new series, Strange World. And before that was a two-hour special that I made with Texas Crew also for History Channel. And before that was my two-hour movie. And to this day, I feel like we are really close to proving at the very least, and this is the most important thing, is that there is a structure underneath the ground that was denied all these years. If we can prove that, then that opens up the door for every other possibility.
It may also reveal your country's deepest, darkest secret, that they subjected not adults, and that's bad enough, but children, foster children, children who wouldn't be missed, children who were transported to this underground labyrinth beneath this radar base in Montauk and subjected to the most horrific, unimaginable tortures at the hands of perhaps Nazis exfiltrated during Operation Paperclip in order to produce an army of super soldiers. I mean, on the face of it, Chris, it sounds ridiculous, but is it?
No, not after what I learned from Alan Hornblum, who wrote Acres of Skin. When we were making the Dark Files for History Channel, we visited Holmesburg Prison. And the story is almost tantamount, except they were experimenting on prisoners. And that was proven to have happened. And Alan Hornblum himself wasn't about to get into any elaborate, you know, tall tale. He said, no, there were mind control experiments here. Make no mistake. And I had Steve Volk from the Washington Post with me, and he's, you know, he's a career skeptic, and that's okay. It's healthy to be, you know, but you have to open up your mind to what's happened before. You know, we studied Timothy Leary. Now, in the forefront, Timothy Leary first comes up as this hippie guru, but there is film of him chumming it up with MK Ultra scientists. And if you really do your research, I feel like Leary was a distraction also. He was a plant. That whole hippie thing was to bring LSD to, you know, to the youth culture. And it's a mind control drug. That's a whole nother story. I feel like all of this stuff is connected, you know? And I feel like a lot of these experiments were meant to manipulate minds. They were phase one in the testing. Now, I feel like we're in application. And if you look at all of the people who've gone haywire over the last 10 years alone, it's something to consider. You know, this is too odd and too numerous to not consider that this may be part of some kind of designed or influenced experiment.
I mentioned that Strange World is this boots on the ground a series. So you were there. You got a permit, and Camp Hero is now, it's a state park or it's a national park. It's kind of it's a museum, a testament to the Cold War, because it was part of the Dew Line in order to provide early warning for these missiles coming over the Atlantic, again, during the Cold War. You got a permit to go there. You went with your team. You had a former CIA operative. You had this hard-boiled journalist from the Washington
Right.
Post, and you weren't allowed to put shovels in the ground. But
no.
What did you find? I mean, you went right to this. I mean, the landmark there, again, this SAGE radar tower, that's the focus, because it's underneath there, supposedly, where this labyrinth, this underground facility was located. What did you find out?
Yes. So, okay, I've done three investigations. One was a character study called Montauk Chronicles. The second one was for History Channel called The Dark Files. That was in large in part a scientific investigation, because we had geophysicists with us testing the ground. And then the third time I went was for the first episode of Strange World, which is just further questioning of different witnesses. So The Dark Files, as evidence goes, was the most important, because one of the things that were very important was a gentleman named Brian Minnick's photos and video. But most importantly was the scientific evidence of the geophysicists. And it was a company called GeoView out of Florida. And they used something called electric resistivity imagery. So they would nail these spikes into the ground. And we had a great resistance from the local security to keep us out, everything to keep us away from the perimeter of that base. But we kind of snuck in a line of this electric resistivity imagery. And what we found, what Mike and GeoView found, was a vertical slice of an enormous structure that's not supposed to be there. And this is just one vertical slice, I would say about less than 100 yards. If we could get past, someone can, because I'm kind of done with this. I put so many years into this, and I'm actually doing a fictional version of it, which I feel like I have a lot to say in that world now. But if someone can get back there with that geophysical equipment, or past the fence and get close to the tower and spend a full day, I guarantee you're going to find something there that has been denied for years. And that opens up an entire universe of questioning. And they can't deny now that there's something there. I feel like GeoView found it. Here's the other thing. We also went to another lot of land that was close to... Camp Hero is on a big giant cliff overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. It's called Montauk Point. And so it's high above. And we were told, no, there's nothing there. You're just going to break through and hit water. Hit water. It's elevated. It was built on a hill. There's clearly something underneath it. And so if you were to bring that equipment past the fence, you're going to find the base. But Mike also ran other equipment, ground-penetrating radar, through a certain area that we weren't supposed to be at one day. And he would not confirm 100%, but he said It's in line with other mass grave sites that I've examined.
Oh,
and
dear.
Off the record, this is in line with other mass grave sites that I've examined. There is organic material underneath the ground, and it's identical to other grave sites. So,
Chris, I got to jump in here. We'll pick this up on the other side. What lies beneath Camp Hero at Montauk, New York? Chris Garitano, my guest. All right. You might want to get on up to the highlights carousel at coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster tonight, Lex Lonehood, has posted a trailer from our guest filmmaker Christopher Garitano's new TV series, Strange World. And in this episode, titled Deadlands, Chris explores a possibly cursed and haunted location where American cavalry slaughtered Native Americans. More dark secrets. Back to more of my conversation with Christopher Garitano as we discuss what lies beneath Camp Hero on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with Christopher Garitano, filmmaker and a host of the Travel Channel series Strange World, that investigates the legends, mysteries, and first-person accounts that fuel America's creepiest conspiracies. And we are talking about Montauk, Camp Hero, on the eastern coast of Long Island. Now, you had, in the Montauk Chronicles, you interviewed Preston Nichols, also, I believe, in the Dark Files. He passed away a couple of years ago, and he's sort of central to the story. I remember in the early 90s when the Montauk Project, that book came out that he wrote, and he was claiming to be at the forefront of this experiment. And at that time, there was nothing on my radio station here in Toronto that's sort of approximated coast to coast. I had nothing to do with it. I couldn't hand it off to a producer. I just read it and was absolutely dumbfounded. But tell me about Preston Nichols, who, I mean, he's appeared on this program, but let people know who he was and what his claims were.
Preston Nichols, much like anybody who claims they were part of the Montauk Project, they were a bit mysterious. Even if you do research on them, it's kind of difficult to track their true history. But in Preston's case, there was something, I think, out of everybody I interviewed, and I luckily got to interview Al Bielek before he died as well, in person, at one of his last places of living, which was in Fort Myers, Florida, years ago in 06. That's when I interviewed Al. Preston claims that he was hired as an engineer for Brookhaven Labs, and then shortly after was recruited to work with as a programmer for Montauk Boys. And what he claimed a programmer did was, after the boys were captured, kidnapped off the street, or recruited in one way or another, and a lot of these kids were runaways or street kids, prostitutes, kids that were already declared as missing. And mind you, this is 1971, between 1971 and 1983. So it was a little easier to disappear and stay disappeared. And Preston claims that after these kids were kidnapped, submitted to torture, beatings, heavy psychedelic drugs, they were traumatized to the point where their personalities and their minds, according to Preston, using the terminology, fractured. So their brains were fractured by this trauma. And at that point, this is where Preston would rebuild them with programming triggers inside of their mind. So he would insert that into the place where they were at the most traumatized, with triggering mechanisms, whether it be a symbol or a word or something like that, to later be triggered to do something. In a lot of cases, so Preston claims that they were triggered assassins. Now, these techniques can be traced to other experiments that were proven to have happened, that these experiments, there was interest in these experiments. You mentioned earlier Operation Paperclip. You know, we recruited a variety of Nazi scientists spared from the Nuremberg trials, brought over here to do everything from develop weaponry and in many cases psychological experiments like MKUltra and stuff like that. And Preston claims that this was another result. Also, Al Bielek claimed that the Montauk Project was another result of far down the line from Operation Paperclip.
Now, one of the most unbelievable aspects of the story, there are several. One of them involves something called the Montauk Chair, which is supposedly sort of directly connected with this SAGE radar tower and has to do with, well, time travel. Talk to me about that.
Okay, so this is what used to be, when you mentioned the book that came out from Nichols originally, this was the forefront of the story. The other stuff seemed to surface a lot later. It was vaguely mentioned in that book. There wasn't really much about torture and experiments and stuff like that. That was all later and mostly focused on in my movie. But when that book came out, the main focus really was about a time travel experiment, and that these boys, young boys, were used in a variety of experiments that the boys would be placed in a chair, a psychic would be in a chair, and the boys would be in adjacent apparatus. And the psychic's name was Duncan Cameron. He was a real guy. He claimed he was there as well. And that these boys and their energy and whatever the result was from their experiments were used to, in a reverse engineered apparatus dubbed the Montauk Chair by Preston Nichols. And again, this is all stories that these guys told that I personally can't invest in until I prove other stuff. And that's why I focused on the experimentation. But this is what they claim. So they claim that the chair itself was used in the experiments, that the subject would sit in the chair, and that it would enhance psychic abilities, that it would enhance visions, and that the other thing, it would be some kind of transmitter to bring thoughts into physical reality. So there's this story at the end of the Montauk Project that Duncan Cameron was in the chair, and that Preston, Duncan, and Al had all devised a plan to take down the project because it was brutal and they were against it. However, there are many contradictions down the road from this. They were against this thing, so they all met inside cabin one of the Memory Motel, which is one of the motels in the town of Montauk, which is 5 miles away from the base. They all snuck out, got into the hotel, devised this plan, and that Duncan Cameron would devise a creature. He was this powerful psychic, so if he sat in the chair, at first they were able to manifest inanimate objects into reality, which would be like a ball or a coffee mug or something like that. But later they said they were able to manifest a mouse. So once the mouse was manifested into reality, they figured they can destroy the project, because the next step that the leaders of the project, including a gentleman named Jack Pruitt, claimed they were about to start to use this on the town and on the major population eventually. That's why they were using it. So Preston, Duncan, and Al all devised a creature that they dubbed Junior, that with the hopes it would destroy the base. And this is a story they told for years. So Junior got loose, it manifested into physical reality and destroyed the base. A lot of this to me was little bits and pieces of science fiction stories I've read and saw in television and movies over the years. So I always felt that that was some kind of thing to distract us from the truth. And the truth is, I believe, that there was a lot of people murdered there, kids, in human experiments.
Right. So in other words, in order to provide cover or distraction from what was really going on beneath Camp Hero, which mirrors other experiments that, in fact, defendants at the Nuremberg trials used. When Nazis were accused of doing these horrible things, Mengele and so forth, about human experimentation, they said, well, listen, we got it from you guys. You were doing the same thing before. And they were referring to American experiments on their own citizens. So that these fantastic stories about time travel, even the Philadelphia experiment, which we'll have time to get around to as well, which is also supposedly connected to Montauk. All of these stories, UFOs, alien technology, was just designed to provide cover in order to distract people from what was really going on, which was just torture and murder.
Yeah, and again, this is tough because I believe in psychic abilities. Obviously, I believe in, you know, infinite space and infinite galaxies and the probability that, you know, we've been visited and perhaps even designed by something else. You know, all of that I take into serious consideration. But in this case, I truly believe that this is all, especially the whole sci-fi aspect and the heroes got together and saved the day. I mean, it's so written, don't you think? It's just so devised and written as a story and not fact. What sounds like fact to me, and when I confronted Preston about it, and if you see in the Montauk Chronicles, he gets genuinely uncomfortable. And that was always the excuse of anybody participating in these experiments, was that I was doing it for science, like Mittelwerks, like Wernher von Braun was, there while, thousands of people were dying inside these tunnels and these caves to dig, to develop V2 rockets, and they were brutally murdered and whatever. And it's like, we didn't care. We just recruited these guys. You know, they were criminals. Mass murder was happening in those tunnels for the sake of weaponry, military science. And this is the same thing. And it's been happening for years. Think about the details of the Tuskegee medical experiments. I mean, that's some sinister stuff. And that happened. The U.S. government was doing that stuff. And it happened all over the world, too. So it's terrifying. This is more terrifying to me than time travel experiments, which I also believe, I'm sure they had interest in. So that's the funny part, like all this other stuff might be true one way or another, but I feel like this particular story was devised to cover up something.
And what did your hard-boiled reporter that was part of your crew, what did he make of Preston Nichols? What did he make of Al Bielak's testimony, Swerdlow's testimony, who's sort of the most famous of the Montauk boys?
Right. I think as skeptics go, they tend to immediately adhere to their code, and their code is to be a skeptic. So it's like, as soon as it sounds funny, generally funny, the story doesn't sound right, these committed skeptics don't believe in any possibility. They throw everything off. And to me, that's a very narrow way to think, because I'm a very sober guy, I look at things in from a distance, and because I don't just believe everything I hear, but I think it's an extremely narrow way to think, just to be on this rhythmic denying of everything that just doesn't sound absolutely safe and normal, because we don't live in a normal world. Everything is out of the ordinary. We've created this artifice to make us calm and feel good about our everyday, but we live in a place that is full of mystery,
Right, and yet he was the one, if I'm not mistaken, who turned you on to the whole story of what went down at Holmesburg prison in Philadelphia.
Yeah, which puzzles me, because he would have been one of the guys that denied MKUltra or denied Holmesburg prison until someone like Alan Hornblum proved it to be true. And so that's okay, proof, I don't believe it until I see proof, but we can't discover proof unless we look into things that might not be true, We have to search and we have to investigate, and if we go in biased, that immediately we say this is not true, then we will never discover anything.
Now, when you were in Montauk, you interviewed some locals, some of them who remembered back to the late 70s about some of these legends, some of these rumors that the experimentation was going on, and in fact it was being directed at the local townsfolk. Tell me about, there's an interview you have sort of cast in silhouette. We don't see this the person, but he talked about chemical spraying. He talked about the radar tower being turned on and some sort of experimentation going on.
To me, he was believable because he had a sense of trauma about him, and he didn't want his identity to be revealed. He really didn't want any compensation about outside of what he missed for work that day. It's not like he could go online and say, hey, everybody, look at me. So that's where I start, Whereas a lot of these people were and still, you know, some people that claim they were part of the Montauk Project still are enjoying quite a bit of attention for this. And I think it's such a traumatic thing. And if you pay attention to authenticity and people who were really through, you know, went through traumatic, physically and traumatic events, there is a jaded aspect to them that's unique, you know, to someone that's been in prison for a long time, you know. So this guy had that about him, and I felt like there was something very genuine. And he claimed that, and this is in line with a lot of things that were happening, that there were officials in his school that were involved, and that they were kind of farming out certain students into these programs, and that there were principals involved, that there were public officials involved, you know, because to pull something like this off, there would have to be a group of people that were all connected. And you know, again, we have no proof of this yet. But if you look at the details of past experiments, let's imagine we don't have proof for those things, but let's read the details. It's shocking, you know, but we were able to prove it eventually. In some cases, MKUltra is because somebody messed up, you know, so they filed something in the wrong place and it was discovered. So that's why my mind is open to this stuff. And so to be on an investigation with someone whose mind is committed to being closed to it and not considering these things as truth is quite frustrating. And I certainly don't want to go on any other investigations with him. I like him as a person and all, but not as a co-investigator.
But talk to me about the nature of these experiments, because he described people walking around the streets of Montauk, which I believe is just, it's a village, it's part of the Hamptons, right? They were walking around like they were zombies.
Well, in that case, he claimed that there were chemicals being sprayed on the exterior, finally being used on the town. And when again, this is many years and I'm truly investigating this. So I talked to the archivist at the library and immediately she denied it. But as I talked to her a little further, she started to tell me, well, there was this one time. And yes, a lot of people, when I was a little girl, they were having headaches and they were having all, you know, uniformly, like everybody was having these experiences in town. Their televisions were reacting. And they all claim, well, it was just the radar tower interfering. Well, you bet it was. But in what way? Was it intentional? Was it just a result of the technology being used? Why weren't the people in town alerted of this? Wasn't this a health hazard? You know, there are a lot of questions. But this guy claims it was deliberate and that people were behaving oddly. And I guess if you have a bunch of people living in a town that are all going through something similar, maybe they don't notice anything out of the ordinary. I don't know.
Chris,
I've heard so many stories, you know.
Chris, we'll take a time out. We'll come back and continue to delve into the Montauk Chronicles. And we'll also open up the phone lines, take questions and comments. Maybe we'll hear some from someone from Montauk.